This is Kate Scott Allen of odeco.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from lazycoder.com.
Hello and welcome to Herding Code. This episode is being recorded on August 10th, 2011. Tonight we're talking about technical book publishing. Tonight we have on all of the authors of Rock's professional MVC 3 tools update. I added that in. So we have Phil and Brad Wilson and K. Scott Allen. We also have on the show, and I'm not going to introduce Phil and Brad because they've been on the show like 20 times. And then Jesse is new on our show, but he's got his own podcast, which is called Yet Another Podcast. And I worked directly with Jesse for a long time, and then he's moved technically out of our team. And now you're on the Windows Phone team. Is that right?
Yes, specifically to move off of your team, John.
I saw your request keep going up and getting denied, so you finally got it through. Yep. So can you explain just briefly what you do on the Windows Phone team?
Sure. I do on the Windows Phone team what I've been doing for the past 4 years, which is community work, which means blogging and talking at presentations and creating videos and generally trying to make sure that developers have whatever they need to be as productive as possible on Windows Phone. Boy, I sound like a hack.
Well, and part of the reason we invited you on the show was none of that, but it's because you've written, is it really 36 books?
Well, it sort of depends on what you count, but too many books to possibly make any sense.
Okay. So we thought we originally were thinking it would be interesting to talk amongst the authors that were on the Rocks MVC 3 book, but then a lot of it was just kind of in general what we thought about technical writing and what our experience was, and I thought it would be interesting to have someone on the show that's written for a lot of publishers and a lot of different topics and all that.
And not being able to get that person, you got me. That's great.
So I was thinking out of the ordinary is maybe start with a question from Twitter, which is from Terrence Dorsey. And he said, printed books, why bother? I ask this as a print writer and editor for 17 of the last 20 years. And it's a common question, why bother write books? So what do you guys think?
Can I go first?
Sure.
So, I thought of the same question a lot, but I think if you look, people still really like to hold the book in their hands. It hasn't quite gotten there. And where it really hit home is I was reading 37 Signals blog, and David or Hannemeyer Hansen, or DHH as everyone knows him, he wrote that their book Rework, which is extremely popular, sold many, many copies, still sells more or a significant percentage of their books in print. And he was really shocked because he thought his audience was the most tech savvy and most likely to adopt ebooks. So I don't think ebooks quite have outpaced print books just yet. So there's still a market for that.
Mm-hmm. And there's also the distinction now, there's printed ebooks, and I think some of the underlying question there is books in general, like, isn't it all just about blog posts? And, there's so much information available online. And I was thinking back to this myself, and I was thinking, when I wanted to learn MVC, I ran out and I bought the Rocks book, the Rocks MVC 1 book, and I also bought Steve Sanderson's book, and, that's how I learned it. And of course, I'd been, there were videos online and there were blog posts and all that, but I think having some context and having things kind of put in some order, as opposed to just kind of a random Google search and see what you find out, when I really myself needed to learn something, that's where I turned. Jesse?
Two quick things. One is I would differentiate between why write and why write books and why write paper books. Those are, I think, are three different questions. In terms of whether books themselves have a place as opposed to a world of just blog posts, I would argue that two things happen when you write a book. First of all, your thoughts get organized in a totally different way with a great deal more substance. And secondly, any decent book has a good editor who's adding tremendous value that just can't be in blog posts. So I think they serve really different functions. Books are much more comprehensive. Blog posts are much more up to date and give you bite-sized chunks.
Yeah, that's something that I really appreciated for the first time writing with an editor, and not just on a technical book, you have a technical editor and then I don't know what you call it. Another editor, an English-speaking editor. And so, it goes through, it goes through different editorial levels. And so there's a huge amount of, I mean, it does feel a little like you just got raked over the coals sometimes when you turn in your chapter and you get back 300 edits sometimes. And Jesse, you were mentioning this on a recent book, and you've written dozens of books, and you still recently got back an edit that you said was pretty painful, right?
It was about 19 pages with about 175 comments.
So, I mean, I think that's definitely a value.
For some value of value.
So, one thing I was thinking might be interesting, was interesting to me on the first go around, was what is the process of writing a book? And I wanted to start way back at the beginning with a question from Justin, I forget his last name. He's Schwarty on Twitter, and he asked, what's the best way to work a first-time deal? Do you submit queries? Do you try and team up with co-writers? How does that work? So I know for me, I was invited to write other books by other co-writers every time. Brad?
I was just going to say that the way I got onto this book was basically somebody was walking down the hall and said, which one of you suckers wants to lose the next 3 months of his life writing a book?
Guilty.
Oh, was that you?
So, Jesse, how about you may be Phil, I'm guessing now for Rock's MVC book, you were the PM, so it was probably pretty obvious they came to you and said, write this book, please.
Yeah, I think that happens a lot. If you work on a product and that product is interesting to a lot of people, then you'll get asked to write a book on that. I think my first book was a collaboration with you, K. Scott Allen, and Jeff Atwood. And honestly, maybe you remember, but I can't remember how we got onto that one other than perhaps Jeff pulled us in because he didn't want to write a book by himself, and he was the most well-known person then, but I don't remember.
I can't remember either. I thought you were the one. Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, no, you know what? You're right. It was my book. I think someone contacted me about it, and I thought, well, I've never done it before, and I was freaked out, so I started calling the people I knew, and you guys were the suckers who signed on to the job. But I ended up having a lot of fun working with you guys on that one. It was a really cool ASP.NET 2.0 anthology book, and it was really where, you know, I got the taste for doing it and wanting to do it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought, you know, that book was, the timing was unfortunate. It came out pretty much immediately when ASP 3.5 came out. But I thought that the, you know, the things that we wrote about, like I was happy with the end result on it. So K. Scott and Jesse, you guys wrote books long before we did. How did you guys get started?
I got started I was interested in writing and finding out what that experience was like. And I don't remember the first book I did actually, but I've only done one book by myself, and that was a very lonely experience. Everything else I've had co-authors, and that's usually a little more enjoyable just because it's, I don't know, it's always fun to work on a team. And I thought the four of us really did well together because there was always someone there to pick up slack and answer questions if one of us didn't have the time that day.
Mm-hmm.
It really worked out well.
Yeah.
But I guess the original question was, how did I get into it?
Exactly.
Did I answer that?
Yeah. Well, no, I don't think so. Did you initiate the process or did someone come to you?
And, you know, it's been a while, but I think someone came to me. I had done a few things for some magazines at the time, like Dr. Dobbs. And someone came along and asked if I would help with a C# book.
Okay. And Jesse, how about you?
Well, to give you some idea of how long ago we're talking about, I was writing on newsgroups, on the C++ newsgroup, and was approached by an editor from SAMS to write a 900-page book in 2 months for next to no money. And I thought, wow, great. And that was my first book, and did a couple more for them, and then ran into what I thought was just Joe representative from Rocks at a trade show. And we started talking about what would I write if I really got to write what I wanted to, and it turned out he was the head of Rocks, and so went off and did some Rocks books, and it's been like that ever since.
I think it's an interesting theme here is that most of the writers that I know of write in other mediums first. For example, blogging is sort of a big catalyst to that. Jesse just mentioned newsgroups, and I could imagine that the next, you know, range of authors come from Stack Overflow question answers and so on like that. It's kind of interesting. And I think that's probably how, like, people get a sense of your writing and decide that they want you to write. But I was wondering about the question of if you don't have a well-known blog or you're not in charge of a product that people want to hear about, how do you get into writing? And that's kind of different from my experience, but my guess would be that, you know, you start writing in one of these other mediums and hope to get noticed and then start talking to publishers and finding out who they are. And then there's always the self-publishing option, which I hear a lot about these days, but I haven't really looked into, and I'm kind of curious about, to be honest.
So, Jesse, I was talking to you about this before the call, and you said you've looked into this in the past. Can you fill us in? Because none of us seem to know anything about it.
Sure. I looked into self-publishing very, very seriously when I realized that I was looking for another publisher. And I looked at, there's a huge range from you do absolutely everything, including the artwork and the typesetting and, you know, 100% of the book and distribute it yourself, to having it distributed by organizations like Amazon, to having it printed and distributed, to having it edited, printed, and, you know, you can cede as much control as you want in exchange for ceding some of the income. The people I know who did self-publishing have been extremely happy, but it's a much higher risk proposition because you don't have a publisher who's going to give you an advance, and you don't have a publisher that has salespeople who are going to help get you shelf space. On balance, I felt that the advantages, especially the editorial advantages of going with a major publisher, and my latest books are going to be with A-Press, where there's an acquisition editor who's positioning the book and who's making sure that sales is involved. There's a copy editor, there's a technical editor, there's a development editor. That's a huge value add to the book. So I pretty much turned away, at least for now, from self-publishing.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I guess that's something that we'd all talked about as an advantage way at the beginning of the show, is the editorial process. And I do have to say, I mean, some of that is important. And then also, I think the whole, there's something about working for a publisher that, you know, you're committed to a schedule. And I think that definitely helps, you know, to have a deadline for me. You know, we've gotten some questions on that. Like Javier Lozano asked, how do you make time to write? And other people, you know, let me see. Sorry, G. Andrew Duthie said, how do you deal with blank page syndrome and procrastination? And I think for all of that, I think for me, having a schedule where I was going to be held accountable, not just by, you know, the publisher, but then also by my co-authors, it's okay, I've got to pull an all-nighter, or I've got to get this thing done somehow, you know? So, Brad?
Yeah, I definitely agree. It was actually really tough for me, the first chapter that I wrote, because not having any experience writing an actual chapter in a book, I procrastinated a lot, actually. I ended up writing the whole chapter in a weekend, and then spending a week, you know, revising it. But it was pretty tough to be motivated, and without the schedule, especially without the shame of being, you know, the last author to check in his first chapter, it would have been a lot tougher.
I thought too, like the whole kind of once there's, you know, talk about writing a book with a serious publisher, then the next step is coming up with a table of contents and a schedule that goes with that table of contents, right? So you've got to come up with an outline for the book, and they'll go back and forth with you until you've got sufficient detail that they're happy. And then at that point, it's, you know, okay, everyone starts writing.
For us on the NBC book, I think we found that creating the upfront material was a little bit waterfallish, to steal a software engineering term, in that, you know, when we got to the end of the book, it looked vaguely like that outline, but not entirely like it.
Really? It looked vaguely like your outline? Mine never looked anything like my initial outline.
Maybe that's because I'm still new. I felt obliged to keep the outline slightly.
Yeah. Phil?
Yeah, I just wanted to echo Brad. Echo. Sorry. No, I totally agree with Brad. I think trying to do it up front is really challenging, because I do feel like that the publishing industry, at least, like, you know, I don't want to, you know, throw anyone under the bridge or make anyone feel bad, but they seem to be really behind the times. Like, you know, I'd really like to use a modern source control system to, you know, write the book and use Markdown so we can actually do textual edits and diffs and all that. Or, you know, just getting them to use DropShare is kind of a big challenge. And so that part I did find challenging. And the idea that you know, can we just, you know, tell you what the sketch of the book is? You know, we're going to have these topics covered and we're going to have this, you know, we're going to do a good job of it. And this is the story arc we're going to take. But, you know, give us a little leeway in terms of, you know, coming up with the outline as we go through it. And that way we could do these tight iterations, you know, the same way we write software. It's sort of how I think, and it's probably only natural that that's the way we want to write the book. But the publishing industry has their own particular way that they've done it for since, you know, Gutenberg created the printing press. And they'll let us know that, that they've had this process for a very long time as we FTP files around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did notice that. So I guess I've worked with three publishers now on four books. One book sadly never was released, and K. Scott knows the sad tale there. But but yeah, and I found pretty much the same thing going on in all of them. Your FTP files up. So step one is, you know, you get your outline approved, you get your schedule approved, then they send you, or somehow or other, they email you probably a big zip, or they point you at a link of a big zip, and you get their author pack, and it has, you know, some Word templates or some Word automate, you know, some Word plugin stuff, and it has a style guide and a lot of time. What I found, I think, with all of them is that the style guides contain some contradictory, outdated, whatever information, and you just kind of have to wade through. And so you get a Word document, you find out what format they want their screenshots in, and all that. You start writing, and then you upload to an FTP. Jesse, you've worked with other publishers. Does that sound pretty much like the standard way of working?
Yeah, it varies with publishers, but yeah, that's pretty much the standard. One of the objections that I continually have is that they will use Word styles, but not terribly well. And so the Word, instead of the styles becoming a tool for the author to be able to set up the work and mark up the work in a way that makes sense and is rational and is intuitive and is filled with macros and make it easy, instead the styles become, you know, sort of the equivalent to commenting. You know, it's kind of burdensome, unpleasant task. But it's to be expected. It's hard. I suppose it's very hard for them to come up with a system that's going to work for technical authors and for their editors and for all the other books that they have to do. I second, was it Brad or Phil who suggested using a good version control system? That would be a wonderful thing. I do that before I submit my chapters. They're kept in version control because it's the only way that I can work.
Mm-hmm. And I know some people do that. We've ended up using a share, like, you know, Mesh or, you know, Dropbox or whatever. And that can work, but you can run into problems with that because if things are synchronous, those things can override each other and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's where Bitbucket comes in. I wanted to go back for a second to this idea of the table of contents, to take that seriously, because I think you're getting questions from folks who want to be authors. And my experience is that there are things that publishers will yield on, and there are things that they have a much harder time yielding on. And in the latter category would be the schedule. That if you start running significantly late, that you're going to get a lot of heat. And the later you're running, the more likely they are to become rigid about the table of contents and the breakdown of topics and so on, because they're trying to get control over the process. If you're reasonably on time, then I think you have a lot more flexibility. And I tend to practice insurrection by incrementalism, which is to say that I give them a good table of contents and then manage the changes in the table of contents one chapter at a time. And as long as you're hitting the dates and it's reasonable quality, most editors will be happy to accept changes to the TOC as you go.
I definitely found that too. Like I can't remember anyone saying, hey, this doesn't match up with your TOC. I think the idea is just to agree on your content before you get started. Brad, I think you were next.
Stephen Proctor had a question about layouts, especially with electronic readers like Kindle and whatnot. But it also wanted to tie into something we were talking about earlier, which was the thing that I found most difficult with the Word templates is they weren't really WYSIWYG. I mean, their formatting on screen looked just bizarre and archaic, and I didn't really understand what was supposed to happen. And now that I've actually seen the book in my hand, I can now relate what I saw on screen to the book, but it looked nothing like what it ended up in the book. But it's also interesting in the context of, you know, the Kindle, which I know a lot of people don't really like reading technical books on Kindle, especially on the small Kindle. The bigger ones, obviously, a little easier, but I found that our book actually turned out really well on the Kindle. I was pleasantly surprised, and I think that's, again, one of those benefits we get from having a major publisher who has experience doing this stuff and these archaic styles that I had no idea what was going to come out. But in the end, I mean, it looks good in paper and it looks good in a Kindle. So they must be doing something right, even though it does seem a little 10-year-old technology to programmers.
I think the whole idea of styles is something I hadn't really appreciated in Word until I started working with these templates from publishers. And then I realized later that they're using those to control all these things. And it's very much like a CSS style. And so that gives you all this flexibility. You apply styles to things. And then later, they lay out the book and it looks beautiful. And I found also we had... Phil, both of us for the MVC2 and MVC3 books, we had after the fact requests for some code that was styled correctly in the book, but we didn't have all the files, separated out. And I was able to write macros that search for those styles throughout the book and grab all that code and download them as files. So, I mean, I've definitely learned to really take advantage of styles in Word. That's something I never would have thought of otherwise.
Yeah, you have to give credit that the layout after the fact is really good, and that's something that they get right and they do really, really well. And the idea of using something like Markdown or whatever to write the book is more about the pre part than the post part, than the the post processing and the layout they do. Someone had mentioned to me, I think on Twitter, that for errata, they would love to be able to submit pull requests to our book, and I thought, yeah, that would be a really cool way to do it. But going back to an earlier point about the schedules, one of the things I always found funny is that part of the reason we have so much pressure on us to try to hit these schedules is the almighty first to market. The publisher is really concerned about getting first to market because they think that that will make for better sales. And maybe in some cases, if the books are relatively equivalent, it will help. But the irony, I think, at least for me, and I don't know about I can't speak for the other authors, is that money is really not the motivation to write a book. And if it is, unless you're like Jeffrey Richter or Steve McConnell, Code Complete, you're kind of in the wrong, you're in the wrong business. And so I think it's kind of funny that there's this sort of tension there where I just want to promote the technology I'm in and I enjoy writing and I enjoy reaching out to people. And their motivation, I think, is more, well, naturally, this is their business. They want to sell more books.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's an interesting trade-off there because, like, obviously with the first book that we worked on with that ASP anthology, I thought there was I thought it was really high quality information, but because it said ASP.NET 2.0 anthology, as soon as ASP 3.5 came out, nobody was going to buy it. And so, I mean, some of that is in the marketing and titling and all that, but I think that, there is, obviously you need some kind of timeliness to it, but I think that was, I was really, we were towards the end of the schedule, everybody was on track, and I just felt like we needed to slow down. I don't know if you guys remember this, but it was at the end of the schedule, and I said, I wrote to the acquisitions editor or whatever, and I said, we need another week. We need to peer review, and we're going to trade around the chapters, and we need to do that in order to, like, ensure it's great quality, but also to make it more cohesive so that everyone knows what everyone else has written more in depth. And I feel like that was one of the best things about this book, is because my chapters definitely improved a lot. And I ended up taking huge chunks out of beginning chapters and moving them to other chapters and things like that. And so I think that was a big, so I think that the editorial schedule is important, and the publisher really wanted to stick to that, but they were flexible because we said, look, time to market by another week or two is not going to make a difference if we're going to get bad ratings on this book and it's not a good book. Let's slow down and make it a better book. And they to their credit, they didn't argue that at all. So who was next? Kevin?
Yeah, well, that actually leads me to a question, which is, given the fact that, like, this MVC book specifically, it's sort of a time-limited book, right? It only has value for a relatively short time in the marketplace. And Phil, no fair delaying MVC4 just to, stretch out your book deal a little bit longer.
I really wanted to do that. That is kind of why I almost don't want to write a. I'd really like to write a book on NuGet, just solely dedicated to NuGet, but with a monthly release cycle, it'd be kind of rough.
Anyway, do you find that that affects how you write the book or the content you do you put in, or you know the speed that you need to get it out? Like, how does that inherent limitation affect the process?
Well, I guess I'll go first. It definitely affects it, and it's kind of a challenge because at the same time that I'm trying to write about the technology, I'm also working on the technology, and if one of them definitely takes priority over the other, and that is working on the technology. And so while I'd like to have a book come out soon after the technology, simply not just for sales, but simply because I think it would be great to have that resource to point people to and, you know, something to give out at conferences. It's really hard to do that because that's around the time when we're busiest with the product, you know, getting all the last minute details sorted out. And obviously we're not going to delay the product just to, you know, for the book. However, we have gotten feedback from people that from other authors who say, you know, if you release too often or create buzz about the next release too early, just after you release the old one, you're hurting our sales and you're hurting, you know, our ability to do this. And it's something that, you know, it does come to mind of, you know, while we don't want to, if customers want the next version of the technology sooner rather than later, I mean, we want to give people what they want in that regard, but we do want to be sensitive to the needs of publishers who have invested all this money to create another book about the last technology. And if we have this like little preview that really is only meant for a small audience who'd like to get their hands on those bits, then, you know, we can sort of like try to keep the buzz a little lower on the previews and then higher on the later, you know, more high quality releases. And ideally, you know, work with authors early. Like we have the insiders and MVP groups where we give a lot of early previews. I think the nice thing about MVC is we tend to do things in the open. So we already have the roadmap out there for MVC 4. So if anyone wanted to start writing about it, at least they know what's coming to start.
Since you guys are in kind of an unusual situation where you're writing about the product that you're building, do you find that the act of writing about it affects the building of the product as well? I mean, you've been writing things and discovered, well, that's really wacky. Why did we do things that way? Or, you know, actually changed what the product does as a result of writing the book.
I wouldn't say as a result of writing the book, because that often comes way later. But I would say as a result of writing blog posts, which often provide the fuel for what I end up writing in the book, we've definitely come to those type of conclusions. Though most of the feedback that's changed the product has come from the public previews that we give out and feedback coming from the community. But there've been, you know, one or two times, I'm sure, where I wrote something and thought, God, that's really clunky. We need to fix that in the next version.
And in reality, the person who makes the most changes like that when writing blog posts is Scott Guthrie. Because he'll take our bits, you know, like a week or two before we're going to ship them out. And he'll start preparing his blog post and he'll go, nope, this is wrong. You got to fix this. You got 2 days to do it.
Yeah, I think I found more about there definitely is something to writing what you think you know and then realizing you don't know it in that detail. And then our technical editor for this was Elon Lipton, who is very, very sharp. And so, I mean, by the time, and then we peer reviewed. And so by the time it went through everybody, there were things where I thought I knew something and I realized I didn't know them in that level of detail.
Yeah, one thing I do notice, and Alana is very good at this, which is I tend to, knowing what I know about the product and sort of the inner workings and the design debates we have, I tend to almost go too deep into esoteric topics that nobody really cares about or nobody will really understand without having the full context. So that was one thing where Alana was really helpful in saying, you know, you and I are maybe the only people in the world who care about this feature or this particular thing. Probably tone that down, throw it in an appendix, and instead think about simplifying it a little bit about what you write about. And I think that's a really good thing that it's teaching me working on the books is how to think about it from a customer perspective and how to think about it from a what people are actually going to care about.
So I really appreciated Alon's review of the book. And one of the things he said was, as I got the chapter on controllers was way too long and had a lot of old information from old versions of the book that was interesting but not really useful to a new user. And so he said, you got to be kidding me. I'm like 50 pages into this book and I haven't seen a web page yet. And so I ended up moving a lot of that out towards the end of the book.
Yeah, I was going to say that every author ends up having this problem, I think, technical author. And just to make you feel like you're in good company, when I learned Windows programming, I learned it from Petzl's book. And when we sat down to learn it, the guy who taught the class said, we're going to skip directly to chapter 10 and start with dialog boxes, because starting with, you know, newing up Windows inside of Win32 is insanely difficult compared to having a dialog box and being able to show it and have some sense of accomplishment right away. So you're in good company.
Well, and that was exactly the question that I was wondering about, which is the whole thing with ASP.NET MVC, there's a tricky kind of balance to it because you have the model, the view, and the controller. You also have other topics like routing and things like that. And so in order to explain it, you've got to start somewhere. And you can't really talk too much about a view until someone understands a controller. And you can't talk too much about how to deal with models and data and all that without... And so there's kind of a chicken and egg. And when I was working on the table of contents, I proposed that, you know, the initial controller chapter be pretty short and just, you know, do controller basics, and then we circle back to it later in more detail.
Yeah, it's a lot like writing about a technology that you work on is a lot like showing people pictures of your vacation or of your kids. Unless there's someone in the background getting hit in the nuts, nobody really cares about them as much as you do. So you have to really respect their time and think about the fact that they want to get their job done. They don't want to learn how you crafted this thing over 20 design meetings. So it's kind of a hard lesson to learn because, you know, like, it's like your babies. You think they're really cute. You want people to know about it. But I think I'm getting better at it, although I do know I slip into it. As Brad pointed out earlier in an offline conversation about routing, I wrote the routing chapter, and I think routing's really cool. But for most people, it's kind of esoteric.
Yeah, I was wondering, Jesse, you've obviously been through this a lot more times, and in pretty much every technology, you've got to start at a beginning, assuming some basic level, and move to a more advanced level, teaching along the way. How do you decide where you start and how you build up to that?
It's a great question, and I think one of the things that we tend to do is to create a model user and a description of that user. You know, this is somebody who already has been programming in .NET, but may not know any of the XAML languages, and they've been programming for at least a year, but not necessarily, you know, and et cetera, et cetera. And you really just try to draw a picture of what that person might be like. And then that's your primary audience. And then who are your secondary audiences who might pick up the book? For me, the solution really is to put this in front of readers as early as humanly possible. And on almost every book I've worked on, I've had some volunteer readers reading the chapters as I'm writing them before they're even being edited. And that can really, really help a lot with getting regrounded on, am I too esoteric? Have I lost track of what people know, what they don't know, et cetera?
Yeah, that's interesting too, with the idea, like I know Manning does these EAPs where they release early versions of the book. And as an author, that sounds terrifying because, you know, as we were talking about earlier, it's a tight schedule. Normally, I mean, we have day jobs, we're working nights and weekends to finish this. And usually I'm sometimes embarrassed by what I'm turning into the technical editor or editorial, you know, process. And so like to throw it out to the entire world is even more terrifying. But on the other hand, may end up with a better book. I don't know.
Well, you also, I mean, there's a false dichotomy there. You don't have to put it out in front of everybody, but you could pick 5-10 readers who represent different levels of experience and have them reading the book in rough form as you write it. Folks are really willing to step up and do that. They enjoy doing that. They like having the influence on the book and getting the early look at the book, and their feedback can be invaluable.
So that's something that's come up a few times, which is the idea of, you know, feedback from other people. And this goes back to something we talked about earlier, is the benefit of having multiple authors, not only because you can peer review and you can, you know, you have other people that are part of this thing with you, but also because you're not writing an entire book. You know, you're able to split things up and say, you know what, I'm kind of good at this and I'm not an expert on this. Why don't you take this and I'll take this? What do you guys think about that? I mean, to me, it seems more and more insane to think about being a single author on anything. I think that, you know, these books in the past with 17 pictures on the cover are a little ridiculous, but it seems really difficult to write a book as a single author unless you're, you know, absolutely brilliant. Brad?
I didn't even know that it necessarily has anything to do with how brilliant you are. I think one of the deciding factors is probably how long-lived is the technology you're writing about. Because with four of us working on our book, we were able to get it done four times as fast, roughly, as if one person was working on a book, which is critical when a technology will be out of date in a year.
Mm-hmm. Phil?
Yeah, I think it's about mimicking software systems parallelism, right? Like megahertz are not going that much faster, but parallelism is the way we're eking out more performance from computers. And it kind of goes with the same with authors. And I think it's kind of interesting, like one of the other questions I asked earlier is, I wonder if we sit down and compare how we do software with how we do write books, we'll notice a lot of differences. Like Brad mentioned the waterfall technology, whereas, you know, I wanted to go with, let's say, source control and using it. And you mentioned, I think Jesse mentioned getting the book out there. That's something that, you know, we think is good with MVC. We have a lot of previews, or NuGet, we get a lot of releases out there. And short, tight, iterative releases, development done in the open, has improved our technologies. And lastly, you know, peer review, right? You know, extreme programming takes it to the quote-unquote extreme, where you have pair programming as a major thing. And I think pair writing or writing with others just makes for a better book. And I think a lot of these software development techniques really help writing a book, writing a better book. And I'm curious if there's any software development techniques that would not help writing a book. And I can't really think of any. I think like software has really advanced sort of like the process of producing a creative work.
Well, I hesitate to follow on that because I don't want to lose sight of what Phil just said about applying software processes. But I do want to play devil's advocate for a little bit about adding more authors to get to market more quickly. There is the whole mythical man month. And I'm not convinced that if two authors can do 12 chapters in 6 months, then 12 authors can do it in one. That said, I think having more than one author can be highly advantageous. What I have been doing, which may be very unusual, I don't know, is that when I have a co-author, my agreement with that co-author is that they'll write whatever percentage of the chapters, but everything they write then comes back to me to be revoiced into my voice so that the book has a single voice. Because as a consumer, I'm not really interested in buying a series of essays by different people. I'm more interested in an author's perspective and a single voice through the whole book. And I really held to that idea firmly until I read your book, which does distinguish each of the authors on different chapters and works really, really well. So I think my conclusion from that is, you know, I am ironclad in my rule, except when I'm not.
Yeah, that was a weird one. We weren't really sure about it, but it was tricky because we had four authors and it got really clumsy to say, I do this, or I think this, or and so it was constantly like, John thinks that blah, 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 and the royal we and all that business. And so we ended up with this kind of adding bylines to chapters, and I'm not sure if I like it, but I do at least, I feel more kind of ownership or whatever of my chapters. And it was nice to be able to write as me instead of as this anonymous group.
So one of the things I wanted to talk about with Phil, he mentioned this sort of iterative feedback loop. You know, tying this into software development, I've found that, you know, and also to the deadline conversation we had a little while ago, I found that doing things in an agile way in software development, you know, having to deliver more frequently less stuff actually, you know, yielded a lot better productivity because you spend a lot less time getting lost in a hole. And especially with the way that I felt like I wrote my chapters, I probably could have gotten them all done a lot faster if I'd had much more incremental delivery on the chapters. So, you know, tying that into the agile way, you know, having the book out there and having, you know, pushing chapters out every week so that people can read them and review them might actually be a good forcing function for getting the book done quicker.
Yeah, and you know, now that I think about it, we're John and Scott and Brad and I are starting the process of outlining the idea for the next book, MVC4, and we're kind of doing it in a private, office document or office live document, or what do they call it, SkyDrive, I guess. And I'm wondering if we should just do it in public, outline it in public, and just get feedback. And I think the only thing that I have, the only reason I have a hesitation on this has been, would our publishers freak out or would they be open to it, right? But other than that, I would love to do it in the open.
Well, that brings up an interesting question because, you know, if we did this in the open, likely the people that would be involved and have strong opinions would be people that are pretty invested in the MVC community and want to see advanced everything. But then as I talk to people day to day, things like going to meetups and, you know, just doing training, there are tons of ASP.NET developers out there who generally know what MVC is, but haven't actually tried it yet. And so who's actually buying a book on professional MVC? Is it somebody that wants to learn it, or is it somebody that already knows it? And I think hitting that, you know, hitting the right demographic or both is really tricky.
One of the pieces of feedback we got on the MVC 3 book almost immediately when it came out was there were some people who were disappointed that it wasn't a more advanced book. And it is kind of an interesting question to me to think about. You know, in some ways, we ended up using some of the material from our blogs, not as is, but, you know, using some of the feedback we got from writing the blog posts and from the community to help shape the book, which is as it should be, because there's certainly, you know, going to be more potential mass appeal for the book than there is for any of our blogs. It is also an interesting thing to ask if somebody who is a fanatical reader of all of our blogs and is already an advanced MVC user, if they'd even consider buying the book in the first place anyway. But I am kind of curious to see what everybody thinks about this idea of, you know, books for the masses versus books for advanced people, because of course the advanced people tend to be the noisy ones on Twitter and the early readers and early feedback givers on your book.
Yeah, I mean, my take on that is it's kind of interesting. If you want to sell more copies, then you have to target the larger audience. And in that case, that's going to be the, you know, slightly beginner to mid or intermediate. But if you want to write a great book, you have to write something that you want to write, that you really enjoy writing. And if you tend to enjoy writing for audiences that are like you, then maybe that's the way to go, right? And I think that's the thing I'm grappling with, is that I have a couple competing interests. One is I want more people to know about the technologies I work on. So that means kind of writing for the breadth, right? But on the other hand, I also want to write about really cool things that keep me interested. And if I, you know, like there was one point where I'd given so many intro to MVC talks that I just was going nuts. And I demanded that a conference take an advanced MVC talk from me so I could talk about some of these cool extensibility points that we put in and some of the more deep topics. So I think that's sort of thing is, you know, you do have to factor in keeping the authors motivated and excited about it. So I think maybe finding the right balance there where you can go deep, but also in the initial few chapters, you don't lose the folks who have never seen your technology but are good developers is really tricky.
Yeah, and this is something where, you know, there's probably all kinds of ideas. We're interested in hearing comments from listeners on this specific book, I guess, shameless plug. But I think it's definitely a question is how do you, you know, should books go beginning to end? Should they be 900 page books that try and cover everything? We'd kicked around the idea of having a, you know, hybrid type of book with, you know, where you've got a chapter maybe that covers views. And then at the end of the chapter, you've got 10, you know, problem solutions that maybe go pretty in depth and cover some really tricky problems, or part one, part two of the book or something. I don't know. Jesse, how have you dealt with this in the past? Has this been a problem for you in determining how you can please everyone?
Well, I don't necessarily try to please everyone. I have a particular niche, I think, of writing introductory books, and my goal in most of my books has been to take folks into a technology and tell them the story of that technology. So I might assume a certain level of not background knowledge, like knowledge in C#, or knowledge, a general knowledge of programming. But if I'm writing a book about Silverlight, then I'm going to teach Silverlight from the very beginning. One thing that you can do to meet Phil's need and perfectly legitimate goal of writing both to spread the word and also to hit the deeper levels is to take advantage of supplementary chapters that can appear on the web. So you could have your basic intro chapter not be in the book, or your more advanced concept not necessarily be in the printed book. But I think the key thing here is to tell the potential reader who the target is and what the assumptions are, so that they don't pick up a book expecting to be taught from the beginning and find themselves in the deep end, or they don't pick up a book expecting it to be MVC internals, and they pick the first two chapters are about what is MVC.
I do think it's a little tricky too, based on who you guys are, that might color people's expectations of what the book is in, you know, or what the book contains. If I'm, you know, buying a JavaScript book by John Resick, like, I don't really expect JavaScript 101. You know, I expect the JavaScript ninja stuff. And so, you know, coming from the team who wrote the book, you know, does that color people's expectations of the depth of the material that's covered in the book?
I think that's interesting too, because like over the past, Rocks has had an intro, or there was a beginning MVC and then, you know, professional MVC. And I think the professional sold better. And the intro book was actually really good. It was Simone Chiaretta, and I don't know if it was him alone or somebody else. It was great stuff. And I think that it's the same old thing as how if you go to the bookstore, some people are going to go for the beginning, but some people are going to be like, no, I'm a great developer, I'm going to go for the advanced, or, you know, whatever. I don't know. I wonder if it's realistic to have people self-rate.
By the way, that book was Simone Chiaretta and Kevan Neyeri. Probably killed their names. I know Simone's first name. I know how to pronounce his first name, but I always kill his last name.
Yeah.
And Kevan Neyeri.
Yep.
So anyways, I'm sure he'll email me to say I messed up his name too.
I got to say, John, just in thinking about this as we've been talking about it, while I do get a tremendous amount of pleasure from hearing from folks who struggled with the technology and found clarity in the book, that with the real proliferation of blogs and the incredible amount of information that's out there, it might be safer these days than even just a few years ago to assume a certain level of knowledge and move forward from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and that's interesting. One thing we did in updating the book, the old version had this very well-liked nerd dinner chapter, but it was very hard to maintain because it was almost 200 pages of step-by-step tutorial, and if anyone got anything wrong or if there was any one character typo in the code, then people were just shot. And so separately in my work, I work on this MVC music store. And so we kind of referred people over to that. We said, okay, look, here's this MVC music store. If you're absolutely beginning and need a walkthrough, you can start with that. And then go on, you know, we're going to carry on over from that. But that's tricky. And I think the whole idea of a start to finish tutorial in a printed book is really difficult, because I was thinking about that earlier today. Like, I publish maybe 4 major updates to that MVC music store in a year, and it's a huge effort. And I mean, there's no way a book publisher is going to keep up with that, you know? So if that was going to be in a printed book, it would be kind of murder, because of the, especially now as NuGet and MVC move so quickly. I don't know. Stupid NuGet, they ruin everything.
You have to wonder about the fact that books are still doing so well. Given all the material that's out there, and given the blogs and the posts and how much Microsoft puts up about the technology online, and yet books are still selling. They're not selling the way they were, I grant you that, but they're still selling quite well. At least some books are. And that speaks to me of a hunger for getting the complete story, getting in a coherent form, and getting it told as a story, as opposed to as a series of snapshots without a structure to put them into. And so for me, I think a huge piece of book writing is telling the story. And we haven't really talked about storytelling as in this discussion. We've talked a little bit about applying software techniques, and I think that's a very powerful thread that we should pick up on, because there are huge parallels. But there's also the whole issue of telling story as well.
Well, before going on with another point that I know is ready to jump out, but what do you think about that with storytelling? Because it's hard, definitely for me. I'm usually in technical books, I'm feeling like I'm in the foxhole or whatever. Like it's survival, and it's finishing a chapter, and it's moving on, it's keeping with the schedule, and it's not getting behind at work and all that kind of stuff. I think it's really hard to get to a higher level to think about the, you know, storytelling level. Do you do that regularly on your books then, Jesse?
Well, I mean, certainly I try to do that on my books. How successful is an open question on anybody's writing. I think one of the things that helps a lot with doing that is paying attention to the idea of that reader who is alone in the room without you there when he's reading your book, and what does that reader need to know? And that brings me directly to the question of the demo examples. And there's always been this debate about, do you make your examples dead simple or do you make them more realistic? And I always come down on the side of dead simple, that examples should not be an opportunity to show off what a cool programmer you are. They should illustrate one point extremely clearly, because you're not going to be there when they're reading it.
So I think that's a really interesting point. I think one of the challenges in telling a really good story is not being prepared up front and feeling rushed to just talk about the technology and make sure you cover the main points. And I think, you know, starting earlier will help us tell a better story overall and really put ourselves in the mindset of answering the question, why do I care? Why should I care? And that's the question that the reader is going to be asking themselves. Why should I care about this? And ideally, we come up with a good story that answers that question. This is why you should care. And if we keep that in mind, I think we'll tell a better story. Going back to your samples, I wrote a blog post recently to introduce the fact that our book was available, but I started it off by talking about the fact that I hate code samples in books. And the reason why I hate them is that, you know, there's typically a lot of typing, and I don't want to go and download a zip file, and I don't want to get the companion CD. And so what I thought we would do as an experiment is put all our code samples in NuGet. You could say it's because I'm the NuGet PM and I'm whoring it out, but so I thought it'd be a really good way to deliver the code samples in such a way that if you're in Visual Studio, we would tell you very clearly what packages to install. And when you install them, the code samples are added to your existing MVC3 project, and you hit F5 and you can run them right away. You can interact with them. You've got the source code. And that makes it so that you don't have to go fiddling around with the zip file and downloading, playing around with companion CD. It's available no matter where you are, as long as you're online. Now, when I wrote that blog post, a lot of people misread it as saying that we're no longer putting code samples in the book. It's only through NuGet, and that I obviously don't agree with. That was perhaps a misinterpretation or miscommunication on my part. Obviously, we're going to have the code samples in the book because you need to be able to read it and stay in the flow of your reading and see the code there. But what's nice is if you then want to try it out, it's really quick and easy. Yes, go buy NuGet.
Yeah, we're actually doing something very similar with the RX book, which is that Joseph Al-Bahari has LinkPad. And we're going to have all of the examples for the Reactive Extensions book in LinkPad so that as you're reading the book, if you choose to, you can just open it up in LinkPad, click on the example, and it's loaded right into LinkPad. You hit run and see the results. And I think what you're describing is a very powerful way to deal with example code.
That goes back to a great question from Twitter we got from Michael Stumm, and he asked, how do you cope with the fact that technology is already obsolete by the time the book is done? And, you know, I mean, there's some of it is that, you know, people are still getting started right now with MVC2 or whatever. But I think also a lot of it is that if the code is kept up to date and any fixes are made in it, that the English doesn't need so many updates. It's more the code. And, you know, if the code is kept up to date, then you're doing pretty well. Phil?
Yeah, and that's exactly why we like the idea of using NuGet for this, is that the code samples, you guys are going to have to take a lot of drinks. NuGet. Okay, rewind. Yeah, and that's exactly why we wanted to use NuGet for this, because if we make a mistake in the code sample, for example, which happens, and I think we already got our first report of one, or if the technology changes and there's a better way to do something, we can update the NuGet package and in the code have the corrections or have the newer version or have both versions. And the next time someone tries that package out, or if they keep a project around with those samples installed, they'll get an update notification saying, hey, there's a newer version of this package. Check, find out how the authors have decided that what they did was wrong and here's a better way.
I want to pick up on what Phil was talking about in terms of the parallels with programming and with writing a book. And I would say probably one of the biggest frustrations that I have as an author is that there's a mismatch between my approach to creating books/software and the needs of the publisher. The publisher needs a steady flow of chapters that are submitted and then go through the editing process. So once you submit them, they're supposed to be pretty much done. And the changes that are going to come are going to be in response to the editing process. So there's no opportunity or no easy opportunity for refactoring and saying, you know, now that I'm writing chapter 7, I realize that chapter 5 really ought to have this other material to set it up. And I could pull things out of 6 and push them back to 5 and reintegrate them into 7. And all the things that we do all the time in source code, because we have the totality of the product instead of these chunks that are supposed to be independent, but which have, you should pardon the expression, a dependency on each other.
Yeah, that's something that the, I don't know, whatever, the analyst in my brain freaks out about is like, okay, what about if I get a question or a recommended change from the technical editor and I make the change, does it go back through the technical editor and should it be recursive and should everything just loop forever? But I have found that to be a bit of a loophole too, because it's like, if there's something where I'm out of time, but I really feel like, wow, if I had more time, I could get back to this, that during even up to the final galley proofs, I can say, oh, wait, there's this little thing that really should be in here and be able to sneak something in. But again, that's circumventing the process. So or should we kind of wrap up? Are there any major areas we've missed?
I was having so much fun.
Okay.
I liked watching you lose total control of this thing very early on in the process.
There's no, it's an illusion of control. We did talk about NuGet. We did not have an appearance from K. Scott Allen tonight. That's okay.
I said one thing. I think. More Allen.
K. Scott, what do you think about all this?
I think this has been a wonderful show.
I have one question, actually, is how this all compares to, you do a lot of magazine writing, and how book writing compares to magazine writing.
Well, yeah, I haven't actually done any magazine stuff in a while now, but magazine stuff is a lot easier in a way, just because you can focus on a very single specific topic. You're usually writing only 1,500 to 3,000 words, and you don't have to be cohesive month to month or, between articles. You can write about two completely different topics.
Okay.
Whereas a book, you have to tie everything together. And it's, you know, every 2 weeks, every 3 weeks, you have to deliver something.
Here's one final thing that I just have found is interesting is since I've been writing books, I found that I've been a lot more, because the whole process of being, of every word I write being, you know, reviewed by a bunch of people and then printed on paper that will live forever or until it rots, makes me like more cautious about my writing. And I wonder if that affects any of you guys at all in your day-to-day, like, because now I find when I write a blog post, anything short of Twitter, I think about it more. Is that just me?
What you suffer from is that you've been writing too well with people who write too well. You need the experience that I had when I wrote my first book or two and was just excoriated by everybody in the field as being a nitwit who knew nothing at all and was misleading in everything I said about C++. Once I got through that experience, it became a lot easier.
Anyone else? Can anyone else top that? I'm going to take that as a no. Okay. All right. Well, I guess we'll wrap up here. Does anyone have anything coming up that they want to shamelessly promote in the near future?
NuGet 1.6 is coming out soon. I mean, 1.5.
And probably 1.6 as well.
Soon after.
Yep. 10 minutes later. Brad, anything? Nope.
Nope.
Yeah. Kevin points out via chat that we have been shamelessly pimping the entire show, our book, which is available in all the standard book places. And yeah.
But you haven't given the title, John. What's the title and publisher?
Professional ASP.NET MVC3 by Rocks. So.
Yeah, I was a little nervous about you guys getting a lot of flack for that, but then I realized, wait, you guys are like half the author team is your show.
Yep. Okay, should we wrap there?
Yeah.
Any objections?
It being 1:15 in the morning, I second.
Okay. All right, thank you for joining us this week on Herding Code. We'll catch you next time. Jesse?
You have to wonder about... His mind went totally blank. You have to wonder about anybody who could ask to speak and then have nothing to say. Okay, I'm going to try that again if you don't mind.
Once more with feeling.
Once more with feeling.
Cody, do you have an opinion on this? Okay. Sorry, my son just plopped in my lap. Okay. Oh, shoot. What was I going to say?
Ask him if he likes stories.
Do you like stories? What's your favorite story?
Angry Birds.
Angry Birds is not a story.
Angry Birds is not a story. I failed as a father. what I thought we would try to do is an experiment. Cody, please, I'm supposed to get to quite 5 more minutes. Okay, John's going to have a fun edit job there. Okay. Co-samples for the... Okay. I'm not looking at that. Roll back.